here at Copenhagen Business School. We're here today with Danielle and Caroline, who defended their thesis yesterday. Are you ready to present to us your topic?
Sure.
So what did you girls research about?
So we explore the role of open innovation in corporate organizations. And we focus on two main cases, Telia and Arla,
yes.
Both industry leaders in their industry.
Mm-hmm. And which collaborate well with stakeholders. So we kind of wanted to look at, is it really that successful as they portrayed, and how does it help their innovation process? So that's what we did then.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we look at we created a model based on the collaborative environment and what we saw happened in their collaborative environment. And then
mm-hmm.
we created this theoretical model
mm-hmm.
with different factors in it.
Yeah, we saw that it doesn't go as smoothly as we thought
yeah.
it would. So then we saw a lot of conflicts, we saw a lot of differences between the cases, and we also came up with some suggestions for managers of how to deal with stakeholders. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, a corporation kind of has to get into open innovation or working with others, because that's the kind of reality we live in today. So they really need to learn to have those relationship assets in place.
Yeah.
So just for our listeners who are not
mm-hmm.
entirely sure what open innovation
yes.
is, can you explain that briefly?
Sure. So the classic definition comes from Chesbro from 2003, and he basically says that open innovation is when there is an inflow of ideas from outside to inside the organization, and it's also an outflow where you let your ideas be used by others in their own innovative processes. So that's basically it. The thing is that today most companies, they only do the inflow, like they basically just sort of take some ideas outside and then just change them however they want to. And the most important thing, which we also mentioned in our thesis, is that to also allow that outflow and to not try to keep control over what others do with your assets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
we kind of looked into, because what we found out was that both cases actually worked with totally different stakeholders. So you had Telia, who only worked with startups, and you had Arla, who worked with suppliers, researchers, universities.
Mm-hmm.
They had such a big diversity.
Yeah.
Yes.
But they chose mostly stakeholders that had the same similar knowledge that they had,
mm-hmm.
and therefore it only resulted in incremental innovations, which is just minor improvements. And
okay.
Telia actually collaborated with startups, which was like the inherent different, like their counterpart.
Mm-hmm.
So they have the possibility to actually do radical innovation, but they just don't take the opportunity that is arising,
mm-hmm.
which
yeah.
was quite interesting.
Yeah, and a lot of companies do open innovation nowadays, because it seems again like this fashion fad, as it was with innovation when everyone started to do it, and now it's open innovation, like everyone feels that they have to do it. And
yeah, and the startup and the corporation, like they're two complete different when you look at like the structure of the company and how they're perceived. You have kind of like the agile
mm-hmm.
counterpart to the structured rule-based corporation.
Yeah.
And we also like dig really deep into, is it like a difficult marriage between a startup and a corporation because they're so different? Is it actually
yeah.
a possibility that they can collaborate?
Mm-hmm.
And what we found was that they had so many different views,
mm-hmm.
so it actually, like, they were pursuing their own agenda instead of making the collaboration
yeah.
as good as possible.
Yeah, there's a lot of research now more done on open innovation, and people kind of challenged the initial assumption that it's either closed or it's either open.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of now say, okay, but you also have several degrees of openness. You have, like, a difference between the breadth of your stakeholders or the depth of the knowledge with your stakeholders, and it's just so many aspects to it now.
Yes.
But it seems, yeah, again, it's the same with innovation, like everyone's talking about it, but people still don't seem to agree on what it exactly is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Arla had been doing innovation for years.
Yes,
like
the 80s.
Yeah. Many, many years, and Telia were quite new.
Mm-hmm.
And we found the Telia case to be quite an anomaly, because they,
mm-hmm.
like when we first went to the first interview with them, they presented themselves in such a way that it seemed like it was 100% a success, that everything they did was so great,
mm-hmm.
that they have managed to get more innovative internally
mm-hmm.
by working with startups.
Mm-hmm. They really helped their stakeholders with every single
yeah.
thing.
So we kind of cross-checked it with their stakeholders
yeah.
again,
and
that's
yeah.
when we saw that, okay, they have totally
mm-hmm.
different experiences from how they perceive the collaboration.
Yeah. It was just weird because it was the same partnership, and everyone had different experiences.
Yeah. So what do you think are the reasons for the different experiences? Is it because they wanted to present themselves as good, or is it because they have different, they do have different experiences?
I think corporations always want to present themselves in such a way that it seems like they're super innovative.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing what one of our,
mm-hmm.
our interviews actually called like a innovation theater.
Mm-hmm.
You're pretending to be innovative, but then you're really not.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
how we saw Telia do it.
I think the problem is also with the nature of our companies, because
yeah.
again, our two case companies are corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they're complex and bureaucratic organizations, and they try to be innovative, but again, it seems like it's a rhetoric ahead of practice, and again, that structure is really dictating how it's gonna move. So like, for example, in Telia, they had to take into account financial, the budget, they had to take into account the time you allocate from your normal work. So they were not as flexible as allowing their employees to kind of be as
mm-hmm.
innovative as they wanted.
Yeah, as we have learned,
mm-hmm.
you should allow your employees to be during this master
yeah, and
degree.
The thing, and also something interesting that we saw was also that in Telia, it really depended on two managers, all the innovation processes, which is very risky, because what if those managers leave, then what, your organization just stops being innovative all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They had like two product champions that was fighting for innovation in the
mm-hmm.
corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And in difference of Arla, they had processes in place, they
mm-hmm.
had kind of the structure and the measures to actually leverage on the ideas, both from
mm-hmm.
internally in the corporation
yeah.
and also externally.
Okay. So
okay.
somehow they were both actually doing things right. It's just they were quite different. So like what Arla was good at was actually to keep those partnerships going. They were very good at creating long-term relationships. They were very good at strengthening their ecosystem. They were very good at keeping their sort of stakeholders loyal to them.
Mm-hmm.
With Telia, what they did good in difference to Arla was that they were actually trying to collaborate with those that were different or more risky. Like
mm-hmm.
Arla was not taking the risk. They were not going for startups or anyone that was too disruptive
okay.
for them. Like Telia was more courageous in this sense.
Yeah.
The only downside for Telia was that they were didn't seem really prepared. Like they were going, they chose the right path, but they just needed more skills, or they need certain organizational learning or something in them that they need to be open to this collaboration, and they're
mm-hmm.
not really there yet.
Okay, so
yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So bringing it back, because you mentioned both incremental innovation and radical. For Arla, you said it was incremental. Do you think for Telia that they would have a higher possibility to do radical because they're more open to...
I think it's not about the openness necessarily, because it's just that they do a good job choosing the startups that has the potential of actually radically changing the industry they're in. So the products that the startup have created are could be radical innovations. They just don't, like, it stops at the point where the startup needs money
mm-hmm.
or need financial support, and then Telia won't give it to them. They just kind of say, yeah, we can maybe have a collaboration, you have
mm-hmm.
to find continue on your own now.
Yeah.
They
okay.
stop it.
But they were pushing them. Remember that quote we had, how can we fit into their products?
Yeah.
Like they always try to change. So the startup, for example, they came up with the B2B product, but Telia
mm-hmm.
kept on pushing them, no, you want B2C because that's what we do and you can leverage on our distribution channels and whatnot. And then they were kind of changing. So instead of changing themselves, they were changing their partner in order to adapt to themselves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like when we did our data coding, that's when we saw, up until that point, we thought that Telia, oh, such a great company on innovation, like they're doing such great things. But then when you read into every line and how they
formulate,
yeah, there is sense like, how can we fit into their product? It's
mm-hmm.
like, should you think like that if you're going into a collaboration? Shouldn't
mm-hmm.
it be more, how can we both benefit
yeah.
from this collaboration
yeah.
instead of how can I...
Mm-hmm.
leverage on their product without collaborating.
Did you see with Arla that they are more reciprocal in the collaboration?
Mm-hmm. The thing is Arla measures success collectively, whereas
okay.
Telia was measuring it individually.
Yeah.
That was a different methodology.
So continuing, like at the end we saw that we used cognitive distance as a measure to see that between the cognitive distance between the corporation and its startups differ. So
mm-hmm.
if it's stakeholders that has similar knowledge to you and you share the similar mental frame, the cognitive distance is short, but it can only result in incremental innovation. Then you have the counterpart, which is the startup, which you don't have the same mental frame, it's quite hard to create this shared understanding, and therefore there's a long cognitive distance between you and your stakeholder. And the longer, the more difficult to collaborate. So we tried to find what we meant was the optimal cognitive distance, and as a corporation, what you're trying to do is do both exploration and exploitation, which is to both achieve radical incremental innovation.
Mm-hmm.
And if the cognitive distance is too short, it leads to incremental. If it's too long, it leads to radical. So we found that the optimal cognitive distance has to be at the point where, on the border between incremental and radical, where you have the possibility to both explore and exploit.
Okay.
And we also created recommendations on how you maybe can shorten this distance that is between you and, or the corporation and the startup, so that the collaboration could be easier.
Okay.
I don't have an example of an innovation that was the optimal, because the optimal cognitive distance is like the mental distance between you and your stakeholder.
Mm-hmm.
So it's how differently you are from them. So me and Daniela have a different mental frame because we've grown up in two different countries, that the path we have taken in life is different. But then you might have similar interests and stuff like that, or similar knowledge, so it's the cognitive distance gets shorter.
Okay.
So that's why for Arla, they only collaborated with the ones that had similar knowledge about the core product, like dairy. You had dairy farmers, you have people working with enzymes that knows about dairy products or the core, like milk.
Okay.
So maybe in this case, someone at the optimal distance would be, well, let's say it would be someone outside their ecosystem, but still someone who maybe gets what's happening in the dairy industry, you know, like at least have that one common thing that unites you, that you can talk about, that you can have a dialogue on. We didn't notice it also because we saw that the two cases were not, again, successful in doing both incremental and radical, and that's kind of like, where is that golden ratio?
The golden ratio is like, you should do this much incremental and this much radical.
And it's hard for me, like, we don't blame them, because of course it's hard for a corporation to do both, because usually one part kind of cannibalizes the other, like it's just hard to maintain two states. So our model, like we also mentioned in the paper, that our model is kind of works in a theoretical setting because everything makes sense according to literature and what we
other.
For both of them,
for both,
like just for any corporation, because we kind of made the model for corporations. But then, of course, we mentioned that, well, you know, we don't live in an ideal world. That's why we added those suggestions of how you should behave or what relationship assets you have to have in place in order to be able to absorb that knowledge from others. So basically, getting that theory and getting that practice side, we kind of thought, okay, maybe this is what could help manage.
So what was your most interesting or favorite finding from all your findings?
Oh, definitely the erroneous perception. Definitely Altelia was saying something and doing completely the different thing.
Where do you hope for this to go? Like, do you hope that more research is to be done between incremental and radical innovation?
I hope that someone, like the model that we made, the theoretical model, I hope that someone tests it. We built a model based on another model by two researchers, and they made it for SMEs, small and medium-sized
enterprises.
And then we took it and applied it in a corporate context, and we saw so many different factors that was actually affecting the dynamics of stakeholder collaboration. So to test it on a bigger sample would be really cool if someone would do.
Maybe also like finding that optimal cognitive distance, because again, it's a very fuzzy abstract concept, and we, in practice, we didn't really find it. We can't really explain, okay, it's definitely here and it happens when this and this aligns. So maybe, whoever looks into it will be happy to.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time, girls.
Thank you
so much for having us.